Lessons for the U.S. in a slow-growing British economy.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, when we take a look at what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. Later today, Federal Reserve Chief Ben Bernanke will hold a news conference on its plans for the U.S. economy. Meanwhile, Britain's gross domestic product is out this morning. That's a measure of all the goods and services a country produces. It's considered to be the economic indicator. Christopher Wirth joins us now from London to talk about it. Good morning, Christopher.
Good morning.
So tell us, what economic news did the British wake up to this morning?
It's a good news, bad news kind of day. Good news is the country's gross domestic product grew as opposed to shrinking, which is what it did at the end of last year. The bad news is the country's economic output didn't grow by much, just 0.5%, which means the British economy is just kind of treading water.
Is this kind of a canary in a coal mine situation for the U.S.? I mean, should Americans be worrying that the same thing is going to happen here?
I put that question to Graham Turner at GFC Economics here in London. He says drastic budget cuts in Britain, similar to some of the budget cuts that have been proposed in Washington, are partly to blame for the British slowdown. But he says the Bank of England has kept interest rates low, and that's prevented further declines. He says the same can be said for the U.S., where interest rates are also near record lows.
The message from the U.K. is that we've got to err on the side of caution, and the economy is very vulnerable. You know, it shows that you've got to keep monetary policy loose. If you don't, you're going to have a gross slowdown.
And Stacey, it's not just Americans and U.S. bankers that are watching the Fed's decision today. Markets and governments around the world are on edge, too, particularly because what the Fed says can have a ripple effect around the globe.
All right, Christopher Wirth in London. Thank you, Christopher.
Thanks.
Some big doings in the medical technology world this morning. Johnson & Johnson is buying a Swiss company that makes orthopedic medical devices in a $21 billion deal. Why would a consumer drug company want to get into the business of broken bones? The BBC's Rebecca Singer takes a look.
People are living longer, and as we age, we don't all do it gracefully. Swiss company Synthes makes nails, screws and plates to fix broken bones. And with the aging population, the global orthopedics market is worth $37 billion a year and growing. Stephen Godwin is a pharmaceutical analyst at Synovate Healthcare. He says a lot of the demand is coming from people who expect to be kept comfortable as they get older.
Once upon a time, people were quite happy to take any sort of support for their aches and pains that physicians were prepared to give them. Now, they know there's a lot more technology out there, everything from things you rub on your joints to things that you replace your joints with. It's a huge market.
Johnson & Johnson is most famous for its consumer healthcare and drugs. And although it's expanded rapidly over the past few years, this is its biggest purchase to date and will make it one of the leaders in providing equipment for bones and joints. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
It is a good-looking Wednesday for the markets. In spite of those lackluster GDP numbers, London's FTSE is up about 0.1%. U.S. markets were up yesterday as well. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 0.9% to close at 12,595. Shares of Sony are off more than 2% today on news that its PlayStation gaming network was hacked and credit card information may have been stolen from 75 million users.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, insuring more than 75 million customers worldwide and providing retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. By Manta.com, providing an online destination for small businesses to be found and to find new customers. More online at Manta.com. And by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733.
This weekend in Rome, Pope John Paul II will officially become a saint. For Rome's tourist industry, big Vatican events like these usually draw in millions of people and dollars. Usually. Megan Williams has more.
It's the usual spring rush at Rome's oldest tourist operator, Corani Tours. In January, the Vatican announced that Pope John Paul II would be beatified this Sunday. So travel agents like this one began to prepare for a surge in tourists. Instead, manager Roberta Zito says,
it was like a balloon that then popped. As the day started to come closer, the interest died down.
Previous crowds for beatification ceremonies, like the one for Mother Teresa, drew several million. That event was announced a year ahead, but the Vatican announced the celebration for John Paul less than 4 months ago. People rushed to book hotels, which jacked up prices, only to find flights to Rome were a problem.
People coming from the United States didn't have time, and also the airlines, they were giving the seats, but at very high rates.
Zito says Americans also realized they wouldn't even be guaranteed a decent seat at the ceremony.
It's an open event, basically first come, first serve. So I think a lot of people realized that the possibility of actually being in St. Peter's Square or around it was going to be very unlikely.
Down the street is the Santina Hotel. It's one of five run by Giuseppe Roscioli, president of Rome's Hoteliers Association.
Normally we are fully booked for the 1st of May. Now we are not.
Roscioli says there are 20,000 more vacancies than last May, when there was no big event. The prospect of all the Vatican crowds pouring in kept regular tourists away.
So the normal tourism, they don't come in Rome during this period. It's the same that I want to make a weekend in Monte Carlo. Probably I will not choose the weekend that is the formal one, because it's a big event.
Which makes it a good time to get a cheap room here. In Rome, I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
And finally, the latest casualty of state budget cuts, the final frontier. The famed SETI Institute in Northern California, which scans the skies for alien life, has been shut down by budget cuts. SETI now needs about $5 million to restore operations and keeping tabs on those billions and billions of stars. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Spy software, data hacking, facial recognition programs, that all used to be pretty complicated and expensive technology.
If you look historically, you know, visual analysis, facial recognition has been kind of a supercomputer function that's only done on servers.
Oh, that was then, this is now. I'm Kai Rizdal. Spying? Yeah, there's an app for that. It's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.